What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Religion of Speed podcast, an automotive news, entertainment, and quote-unquote educational podcast about grassroots racing and car culture, where we give you ways to get out and have fun with cars. I am Matt Overstreet.
And I am Chris Huffman.
All right, Chris, we're going to have to get through this one pretty fast because unfortunately we did blabber on too much before the show.
This is always our thing.
Yeah, it's an issue.
Yeah.
This is why we have a podcast, though, because we can't stop talking.
Yep, so we might as well record it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
At some point, I've been recording all of our pre-show stuff.
Yeah.
So at some point, let us know. If you want to hear that, I could put that stuff together into like a blooper reel or just some behind the scenes stuff.
I would be happy to hear that. I'd be happy to have people making fun of me for the stuff we said before the show.
Right. Because you think we're unprofessional on the show. You should hear us beforehand. It's terrible. But luckily there's not, I mean, luckily and unluckily, I suppose, there's not a whole lot of news to cover this time around.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like we had a really heavy news week last time.
Yeah. And this time I was kind of like, eh. But there's a couple really big announcements. First of all, I just want to get this out of the way. If you want to buy Paul Walker's Supra from the first Fast and Furious movie, you can do that now.
All you have to do is bring a briefcase full of cash to Barrett Jackson.
Right? And I'm not talking a clone. I'm not talking like somebody built one that looks like it. No, this was the actual movie car.
The actual car from the movie built by Craig Lieberman.
So that's the thing, though. I don't know if it was Craig Lieberman's car. I think this one... I closed the tab, didn't I? Oh, there it is. I think this was the number two car. I think they built this for the movie. So they used this car in the movie.
Okay.
Craig Lieberman's car, I believe, was like, it was in the background of some of the shots.
Oh, okay.
But this car was driven in the movie.
So Craig Lieberman's car was only used as basically a set piece.
Yeah, okay. Because it was his car.
Gotcha.
You know, and then this one was the one that they were driving around in during the scenes and stuff like that.
So I wonder if this is the one that jumped the railroad tracks.
No, it's not that one. I'm pretty sure that one was like a hollowed out shell or something, wasn't it?
It just fired out of a slingshot.
Yeah, probably. The only problem with this car is it is actually an automatic.
Wow. I have heard that that's a big thing with movie cars because they have to operate so much production equipment while they're driving them around.
Yeah.
And as long as they don't show scenes from inside the car, which they usually do that with a green screen anyway.
Yeah.
You know, how Fast and Furious loves to show people operating the gear lever and it, you know, activating warp speed.
Well, ironically, you can see in the interior picture of this, which I never really realized the blue interior on this car, but
yeah,
that is on point. It looks like a manual shifter.
It does. It's got a manual style shift boot and everything.
But I think that's just a secret automatic.
It's just there to camouflage it.
Yeah, so that way when they did interior shots when they were driving,
yeah,
it would look like a manual.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised they went through the process of doing that for that detail.
That is a really minute detail. But you know, it was a target top car.
Yeah.
So even the exterior shots, when you get really, really finicky fans, they're going to zoom in on those pictures. And Fast and Furious has some of the most detail-oriented fans.
Well, I guess that's my point, though, because the first Fast and Furious had so much weird, dumb shit in it.
It did.
That were, like, you know, they missed details. Like, there's a shot of Paul Walker's Eclipse where he opens the hood, and briefly you can see that it's a 420A engine, not a 4G63.
Wow, I don't remember that one.
It's a base model engine. It's very brief, but, like, so they didn't care about that, but they cared enough to make the interior of this car look like a manual, even though it's an automatic.
We should write a letter to the production staff and ask them what was going on with the continuity.
Right? Yeah, it just seems strange. I really like the gauges where the airbag used to be.
That is cool.
Like, just fuck the passenger.
Yeah.
You crash, you get gauges in your face now. No airbag.
Yeah, which is really ironic because Paul Walker, that's how he died.
Ooh, yeah.
That's sad.
Yeah. Oops. But I will say, this car, aside from the graphics, I think it aged decently. Especially the Bombex body kit, I think, is actually still pretty tasteful compared to some of the body kits back in those days.
Well, and those polyurethane body kits are always so cool because they could actually handle real world driving.
Yeah, I've heard, though, making the fitment of those kits good is really hard.
Do you have to use a heat gun?
Probably. I haven't really seen the process, but I've just heard they can get warped a little bit, and then it's just impossible to get them to line up right. But No, I still think that's a good looking car for the most part. I would personally, the wing is
a lot.
Yeah. Which is weird, because I think if you just replace that with a carbon fiber GT style wing.
Even if it was the same size.
Same size.
Yeah, yeah.
Bigger even. I'd be like, yeah, that's cool. But because it's aluminum, it just seems outdated.
Yeah, but it was really on point for the time.
It was.
For 1999, this car was great.
And there's the exact car in the background of one of the scenes.
There it is.
Oh, I think this is after the train jump.
Yep, this is when he's handing him his keys. You can see he's cradling his arm and he's got the blood stains on his shirt. He's about to look up and say, "You know what you're doing?"
Back when, before, what was I trying to say? Like, in the first movie, this is where Vin Diesel started to transition from street racer to action hero.
Yes. That's why I think there's a major difference between the first four movies and then every movie that came after.
Yeah.
Because in the first four movies, you know, with a few exceptions, it's a street racing movie. It's got some action components, mm-hmm. but it's centered around the driving.
Yeah.
After, you know, from fifth movie on, they are international super spy action heroes.
Yeah.
You know, these aren't just kids who built cars and went racing and ran from the cops.
And then occasionally there's a cool car.
Yeah. There's a cool car that they use to kill nuclear submarines.
Yeah. Man, so we were going to talk about it before, the trailer for the new Fast and Furious movie.
Yeah.
We never really got around to it. I want to just touch on it briefly, just because they pulled a bait and switch with that first trailer they released.
Really?
Because it starts out and they're like, man, do you remember when things were like the way things used to be? Like, yeah, man, I miss those days.
Yeah.
And then it's like something, they go to the old house and there's something about like race wars or street racing. And I'm like, oh, shit. Are they doing it?
Are they going back to their roots?
Are they going back to their roots? Yeah. And then they're like, yeah, but now things have changed. And now it's like, we have cars that fly. And I'm like, oh, my God. God damn it.
And then John Cena shows up. All along, John Cena's been Vin Diesel's brother.
Yeah.
And nobody knew.
Right. And some, they look nothing alike.
Yeah.
And somehow WWE controls the Fast and Furious franchise now.
And now John Cena's the younger brother.
Yeah.
Which, that's hilarious. You know, that was probably in his contract.
Yeah. I gotta be younger. Oh my God. So, although I did see, not only bringing Han back, the younger Asian dude that was like, it was him and the girl from Tokyo Drift that were like their technicians.
Yeah, yeah.
He's in that movie.
The guy with the British accent.
Does he have a British accent?
Yeah, he was telling the guy who told Neela that she was drifting wrong, and she doesn't need a computer telling her about her throttle.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, you know exactly which guy. Yeah, I saw him briefly in that trailer for the new one. So I'm like, that's a weird pull to bring him back, but
yeah. But they're trying to get the fans, and I mean, and everybody loved Han.
Right.
Han was pretty much a universally loved character, so it's cool that we're going to see him back. Weird to see him introduced, you know, cradling a sniper rifle.
Not what I was expecting.
Yeah. It's like he didn't show up behind the wheel of a car. He's sniping.
Right.
But I think that's the kind of thing that really kind of illustrates the transition from the first four movies to every movie that's come since.
Yeah.
Is, you know, they're more about guns than cars.
Yeah.
The fifth movie, which, you know, I'm probably going to get a lot of hate for this, is my least favorite of all of them. Because
I don't even remember. Is that the one where they're in cop cars stealing
that's
safe?
That's the one.
Well, I'm surprised I haven't remembered which one that is.
the only real street race in that movie is a drag race between four cop cars.
Yeah.
And that's not what I paid for when I went to see a Fast and Furious movie. No,
they really jumped the shark. I mean, I guess you could argue they jumped the shark way earlier than that, depending on what you want. But
right. Some people think that it stopped after the second one.
Right. Like, and there's a lot of people out there right now that like the newer movies, clearly, than they like the earlier ones. Because they make more money now than they did when they... Like the original ones did.
Because they're just these gigantic spectacles.
Yeah.
You know, like leaping supercars through skyscrapers in Dubai.
Yeah. And then lifting up the supercar as a super strong man.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like you don't need a jack. You have the Rock.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. I will watch that movie when it comes out on streaming. But I ain't going to a theater. I'm not risking COVID to go see that shitty movie.
You know, I might just go to the parking lot because the midnight release for Fast and Furious movies is a car show in and of itself.
You know, we need to do a Just Browsing.
Let's do it.
For that. Midnight release of that movie, just browsing the parking lot.
Let's do it. Because you see some really cool shit, and you see some just, wow, out there. This person saw Fast and Furious, went to the nearest O'Reilly, and bought all of those dress-up kits.
Yeah.
Like, look at all those fake vents on that car.
Oh, man. Yeah, that'll be a good time. I didn't think we were actually going to get any, like, legitimate content out of the Fast and Furious thing, but hey, we will. So be sure to check out our YouTube channel, religionofspeed.co. Man, I don't even remember. I know it's religionofspeed.co on Facebook and Instagram. I think it's just Religion of Speed on YouTube.
Yeah, I think it's just the Religion of Speed YouTube channel.
Yeah. Branding is hard
these
days because everybody has named everything already.
Well, and everybody's trying to brand themselves.
That too.
Everyone is a brand now.
Mm-hmm.
And brands are trying to be people.
Right. Yeah. We are entering a future where it's going to be a strange future because everybody is going to be a brand.
Yeah.
Like, legitimately. And you're going to start... I'll talk to you about this after the podcast. I read an article pretty much like saying the future of the internet is going to be very strange with a lot of paid subscriptions. Like, subscribe to my... Like, it'll be Facebook. But if you really want to see the fun stuff on my Facebook, give me $1 a month.
It's like, for $1 a month, you get to see everything a month early.
Right? Do you really want to be my friend?
Yeah.
It's going to be a strange future, man.
Yeah. That's... I might have to move out into the middle of nowhere.
Right. I'm just going to embrace it. So if you want to see the cool stuff of Religion of Speed, give us $1. No, I'm just kidding.
For our Patreon.
Right. Don't get me wrong. I do want to start a Patreon at some point because I do like the idea of crowdsourcing instead of doing advertising.
Yeah.
And people listening to the show will see we have started to do some advertising. We got advertising break now. And because, you know, part of Religion of Speed that I want to do with this is I do want to start making a little bit of money on it. So that way we have money to do cool stuff to bring you as content.
Yeah.
To entertain people.
And, the more support we have, the more content we can bring you because the more time we can spend away from our day jobs.
Right. Exactly. We got to make money one way or another.
Absolutely.
And right now all this stuff's coming out of our pockets and not that we're doing a lot, but, you know.
Yeah. And not that we're not happy to do it.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to do it regardless, but... If we get a Patreon and we get some, you know, even just a little bit of revenue coming, that's just bigger and cooler shit.
Yep.
You know, and I do want to pass that down to people.
Absolutely.
Like, I want to arrange, at some point this summer, we're going to do a Religion of Speed cruise. We're going to be up at the crack of frickin' dawn.
Okay.
And we're going to cruise the mountain roads, go get some breakfast.
That sounds fun.
Right? It sucks getting up that early.
Yeah.
But it's fun to be up that early.
It's fun. Yeah. Once you get there.
Yeah.
Your whole morning, your whole day is better.
Right.
Because you got an early start on it.
Mm-hmm. You're there before all the traffic, before all the cyclists.
Yes.
Before the tourists. Cyclists. Yeah. Sorry, if you listen to the show and you're a cyclist, sorry, we just don't like you.
just stay on the sidewalk, please.
Yeah, just like, you know, share the road. Sure. But hey, it's a road.
Right.
You can't do half a mile an hour around a corner.
Right. You don't need a whole lane.
We're gonna get some hate mail. That's all right though. I feel like car enthusiasts and cyclists have just been it's been a rivalry for a long time now.
Yeah, I think it has. Honestly, even pedestrians and cyclists don't get along too. I think no matter what your method of travel, you always resent someone who makes a different choice.
That's a good point. Speaking of resenting people that make a different choice, electrification of cars. We're going to talk about that some more because we're an electric car podcast.
Apparently.
but I really want to talk about the new electric car news because I think it'll actually apply to a lot of grassroots racers. And that is, of course, I'm talking about the new Ford Lightning.
Yes.
So I didn't think I'd be excited about this truck at all. Yeah. I thought I'd be like an electric F-150, whatever.
Right.
But the specs are actually pretty good.
The extras, like the fact that you can plug the F-150 into your house, run your house on the truck's battery,
right,
until, you know, the sun sets and electricity becomes cheaper, and then the truck charges itself.
Yeah.
That's just the kind of, like, you know, some people could call that a gimmick, but I think that that's a really neat idea.
And I like that because, you know, that shows that the electric battery pack, I mean, Tesla's been doing this too, of course, but, you know, it just proves that electric battery pack has a lot of storage capacity to run household, quote unquote, items.
Yeah.
So my thing is, if you go to the track.
Yes.
You know, you have 11 outlets there. You can run all your tools.
Your air compressor.
If you're camping, you got your supplies for camping out the track. And supposedly, this truck can tow 10,000 pounds, so you could tow your race car down there.
Tow your race car down there, and you've got, you know, your complete power source
right
there. What I wonder is, if you had an electric race car, and this is years in the future, but say you race a Tesla, you tow your Tesla down to the track, can you charge it off of your F-150?
Maybe.
You know,
but then you're running into issues of getting home in your F-150. But
like, do I want a fast lap time or do I want to get home?
Right. So the basic specs of the Lightning are, like I said, 10,000 pound towing capacity,
which is massive,
which is really good for, you know, a lightweight pickup truck for an F-150. I don't know what the regular F-150 is. I'm sure it's around there. I know I was looking at the V6 Chevy pickups. Because I rented a U-Haul, and it was a V6 Chevy, brand new. And I was like, this thing actually moves pretty decent.
And it was the boosted V6.
No, this is just an NA V6.
So an NA V6.
Yeah, okay. But I was like, you know, just thinking to myself, like, as just a work truck, like, I don't think I'd get a V8. Like, this thing moves just fine. I was hauling trailer and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Because the new Chevys, they make, like, 300 horsepower. And I was like, what's the towing capacity? And it's, like, 8,000 pounds. Maybe 7,500,
I think it was. Which for a V6 is great.
Yeah, it's really good.
I mean, I think the top end for the Pathfinders is 6,000.
Yeah.
And that's if you get the top trim.
Mm-hmm. I mean, a big chunk of towing doesn't even just come down to power. It comes down to, like, wheelbase and weight.
Because you can't tow something that's heavier than your vehicle that's used to tow it.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
But, and the F-150 Lightning is, of course, going to weigh a ton, so because electric vehicles weigh so much.
Yeah.
But, so you got 10,000 pound towing capacity. You have either a 230 or 300 mile range, depending on the package.
But I'm curious if that's with or without a payload.
See, I imagine if you load that thing up to 10,000 pounds, the maximum payload.
Yeah.
I would be surprised if you got like 120 miles out of that.
Yeah. So you'd have to plan if you're planning on towing over a distance.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, if we're living here and we just want to tow a car to PPIR and back, that's easily doable.
Yeah, you say that. But the PPIR from here is like 90 or 89 miles.
Is it a solid 89 miles?
Yeah.
Wow. It's just such a pretty drive. I didn't even think about it.
But, you know, you're doing, you know, 75 miles an hour, and it takes about an hour.
Yeah.
A little more, so.
So, yeah, almost 100 miles. Wow.
But, so, that's my only concern with this truck is, you know, how much is that range going to decrease when you tow?
Yeah.
If it doesn't decrease, if you still can get like 160 out of it.
Yeah.
You know, then I'd say that's decent.
Yeah.
But also, I'm not going to be towing 10,000 pounds either.
Right. Our cars are pretty lightweight.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, if it can tow, you know, if it could tow my 240 to PPIR and then back to my house on one charge, then it does what I need it to do.
Right. But, you know, you always hate to have range anxiety.
Yes.
Doing something like that.
Because it's not like you can just pull over and get gas.
Right.
You know?
And I know the quick chargers are getting better and better.
Yeah.
So, I mean, sure, you could probably stop at a gas station for like 20 minutes and top off, but you know racing day. Racing day is a full day already.
It is, and especially if you're using the power source when you're at the track.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be depleting that more.
Yeah.
So we'll see, but I'm excited, you know, for the direction it's going because
yes,
you have that range, decent range. You have the towing capacity. You have the starting price, which is only, I already forgot what it was. It wasn't much. 30, that's not the right article. Was it 36,000, 38,000?
I mean, if it's under 40, then, you know, that's very competitively priced for a truck this size.
Right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, this says 41, but I'm pretty sure I saw that the base price, which you're not going to get it for base price. Cause
right. Dealer markup, you MSRP, never do. Destination, there's always a bunch of fees.
Yeah, but I want to say the one I saw was 38. But even then, like, for a brand new truck, that's not even that bad.
And not even the small truck.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, brand new F-150. I mean, buying a gasoline truck, you'd pay that much or more
from
any of the competitors.
Yep. And the fact that it has that frunk, I love the frunk. It has so much storage up there. Like, I didn't even think about that, but because it still looks like a pickup.
Yeah, it has a massive amount of cubic footage.
Yeah, feedage.
Cubic footage.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I'm excited about this truck, and we'll see. I'm going to wait a few years anyways, because before I'd ever buy an electric vehicle, I want a house.
Right.
Like, I can't charge it at the condo. We don't have any charging stations here.
Well, and garage space is like gold for us right now.
That too, yeah.
Like being able to just tinker in your garage and not have storage space anxiety.
Yeah, which is what I have right now. Still trying to find a place to put the Corolla. But my point is, though, so if I get a house and have a charging port there and can run my house off the F-150 if I want to, in 3 years, we'll see how these things hold up, what people actually think of them, we'll see at that point what the towing range actually is.
Yes.
You know, and if they're 40,000 now in like 3-4 years, it'll be 30,000.
Yeah.
So.
And, you know, you can count on your average truck owner to torture test a vehicle.
Yeah. that is one of my issues, though. Like, if buying a used pickup.
Yes. Yeah. But at least
they get beat.
At least you know. At least you know what they can handle, because somebody somewhere has done something worse to their truck than you plan on doing.
This is very true. So there's a ton more information out there about the Lightning. I just wanted to briefly talk about it and how, you know, the towing game for race cars in the future is going to be a lot different.
Yeah.
And hey, if we're spending less money on gas to get our vehicle to the track, that's more money for race gas when we get to the track.
Absolutely. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I want as many electric cars on the road as possible so that I can burn more gas.
Yes. So I'm super excited about the Lightning and what that means. Not everybody is as excited about the Lightning as I am.
Just because of the name, right?
Because of the name.
Yeah.
Because it isn't a sport truck. It is a all around, it's just an F-150.
Yeah, it's an F, but I mean, I'm betting that this electric Lightning would go toe to toe, maybe not on the quarter, but maybe on the eighth against the old Lightning.
I bet you would smoke it in the quarter.
Just, you would think it would smoke it the whole quarter mile?
I think there's people saying, so when I say there's people saying the 0-60 time is about like 4.1 to 4.4 somewhere in there, which is
on a truck
crazy fast.
Yeah, that's a WRX,
right? I'm not bringing up the article on here. You know who said that?
Who said it?
President Biden.
So I'm not sure if it's true.
Right? Yeah, he is a politician. He's known to lie. But there was a video of before the reveal of Biden at the production plant in Michigan, test driving one of these. And he like pulls up to the waiting press and he's like, yeah, this thing moves. I think we got to 60 in like 4.1 or something.
I love that we live in a world where the president is in a Ford commercial, a sitting president.
Right? not even an official commercial, but yeah, like basically. Like,
yeah, he's obliged now, though. When Dodge and Chevy come out
right
with electric trucks, he has to promote those or else he's playing favorites.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's all it was him promoting electric vehicles and stuff like that. But still, it was hilarious to me to see Biden with his big aviators pull up in a camouflage Lightning like, this thing's quick.
Well, and the best thing is he looks like he belongs on a used car lot.
Oh, he does. That's very true.
So it's perfect.
I worked with a salesman who, years ago, now that I think of it, looks exactly like what Biden looks like now. Yeah.
I swear every dealership has a guy who looks like Joe Biden.
Yeah. I wonder if that is a cause or an effect.
Yeah, I wonder where that correlation is.
Yeah, do those people that look like that just end up being good salesmen / politicians?
Yeah.
Or do you just end up looking like that if you become a salesman / politician?
I think when you're that tall, it inspires the confidence you need to be a good salesman.
I'm tall.
You're a confident guy.
Am I? Haven't always been, that's for sure. You should have seen me when I was in my teens. Ooh, actually, no, I don't want anybody to ever see a picture of me in my teens.
Well, we'll make that a point.
Yeah.
You just have to scrub the internet.
Yeah, it's bad, man.
You should see pictures of me in my teens. They're not pretty either.
Yeah. I mean, they're called the blundery years for a reason.
Yep. And I certainly blundered through them.
So, yeah. Anyways, the point is some people don't like the fact that it's called a Lightning, because it is just a regular F-150 that's electric. And in the past, of course, they were sport trucks. So the fact that it didn't come out as a sport truck, some people are angry about.
But the pun is just fantastic.
Right. I mean, you have that name.
Right.
This is the perfect opportunity to use it.
I had a friend who mentioned that they had the next Thunderbird had to be electric too.
Yes. Yeah. Shit. Electric sports car.
Yeah.
Thunderbird.
That's perfect name.
Oh.
It's already there, and it's going to make a lot of people mad, but the pun is too good.
And the logo, they can make a dope logo.
They really could.
Out of a Thunderbird with, like, electricity shooting out of it and shit.
A bird holding lightning bolts.
Or they could just have Zapdos on there.
Oh, let's just make it Zapdos. I like it. That needs to be, they need to license this through Nintendo and put Zapdos on the hood of that car.
That would be amazing.
I would buy one just for that.
Yeah. Like, well, you got me. How much is it? Fine,
it's
here.
It's like I'm a millennial and you put a Pokemon on this car. You're playing hardball.
I mean, you could always buy the Pikachu Beetle.
The Pikachu Beetle?
Yeah. You ever see those?
No.
Yeah. You didn't know those were a thing? I always love Googling things on the show because
we're a radio podcast.
Right, exactly. It just doesn't transfer over very well.
Okay, that's cool.
Yeah, it actually does a pretty good job. Like, they put some eyeliner around the headlights and the little Pikachu mouth on it and the ears. They actually have ears and a tail. Like,
I never noticed how much Pikachu looks like a yellow bug. Oh, somebody did it with an old one.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
That looks great.
Right?
It's even got the little body stripe on it.
Yeah, it does. But yeah, it's got the ears, it's got the tail, the two little stripes. There's a lot of car guys like, what? Listen to this right now. They're like, what the fuck is a Pikachu? At least if the older guys listening to it. I don't know. I think even old people know what Pikachu is at this point.
He's a universal. You talk about branding.
Yeah.
You know, he is a brand in and of himself outside of Pokemon.
Right. Yeah. Even if you, like, I know there's probably parents out there that just think every Pokemon is a Pikachu.
Yeah.
We're not a Pokemon podcast, though, so let's move on. We have other things to talk about.
Maybe that's another podcast we should do.
We could do a Pokemon podcast.
Yeah.
That would be a weird... It would be completely different audiences.
But then we're pretty much obligated to build some sort of Pokemon car.
True. And I say they'd be different audiences. I don't know if they would.
Not in this day and age, no.
No.
Yeah, honestly, Pokemon's more universally loved than cars by people our age.
Well, that and just, like, people our age, like, that's what we grew up with. That's why, like, car enthusiasts these days seem to just be a bunch of anime nerds.
I actually passed a lowered Mustang on wheels and, you know, had an exhaust. And as soon as I got up, it had, you know, a trunk sticker.
Oh, really?
From Dragon Ball Z, which was poking up in the rear window.
Yeah, it just... I don't know, because that's what we grew up with, so...
Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, how many old, like, not even muscle cars, I think this is before that, but, like, old hot rod cars had Betty Boop on them.
Yeah. Yeah, where they painted them to look like the planes from World War II. They gave them the mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah, the teeth, like the shark nose.
Right. But, I mean, there's always... Pop culture and cars always... cross.
Yeah.
You know, and anime, cartoons, video games, that's pop culture these days. So. Yeah.
And you're right, they were huge for people our age.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if you are a giant nerd, then you might be excited about Tesla Roadster's SpaceX option, which is the weirdest option I think I've ever heard of on a car.
He literally put a rocket booster on the back of a car.
Yeah. So supposedly when the Tesla Roadster actually comes out, which Elon has said will look considerably different than the prototype we've seen, not only will it be insanely fast, it'll be too fast, in my opinion. He is claiming it'll have a 0-60 time of 1.1 seconds with the use of cold air gas thrusters.
Which, you know, that just raises, I have so many questions.
So many questions.
It's like it's an electric car. Do you have to refuel the rocket portion of it? How fast is it without the rocket? And he claimed a 1.1 second 0-60, which I feel like should come with a health warning.
I think that's like 5 Gs.
Is that 5 Gs?
Is that what they meant by 5G? Is that what we're getting?
There we go.
I think that's what it said. Oh, sorry. I exaggerated. I was dyslexic. It's 2.5 Gs.
So 2.5 of Earth's gravity just getting to 60 miles an hour in this thing.
Yeah. So if you want to know what that feels like, just tilt your head back and look at the ceiling and see how that feels. That's 1 G. Now 2.5 times that.
Yeah, I think this is actually, I think most of the people who can afford this car aren't going to be able to survive it.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's gonna kill somebody.
Yeah, just and it's going to kill somebody just from the acceleration. They're not going to hit anything because it's a Tesla.
Yeah.
So
I don't know. You worked at Aspen when it was next to a
That's Gerber. True.
How many Teslas were in that parking lot smashed up?
And every single one claimed that they were doing it on autopilot.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that 0 to 60 time, though, like, in 1.1 seconds, so that's, how far away would you have to be from a telephone pole? This is like the one-inch punch from, why can't I think of his name?
Bruce Lee?
Bruce Lee, yeah.
Yeah.
It's like the one-inch punch. Like, you could start 10 feet away from a telephone pole and wrap the car around a telephone pole.
Before you even realized what was happening.
Right.
And there's no engine noise to warn you. It's just silent death.
Oh, my God. Like, 'cause 60 miles an hour into, like, a solid object.
Yeah. I mean, now that being said, all of these caveats aside, I desperately want to experience this.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah. No, I don't really think the general public needs this at all.
No, but I still want it.
Yeah, I definitely want to experience it.
Yeah.
I do know if you, like, I rode in a Tesla Model X, and we did launch control in ludicrous mode, like, two or three times.
Yeah.
I started feeling sick.
Wow.
Yeah.
And you like to take your car to the racetrack for fun.
Right. I mean, I was in the passenger seat. So I do tend to get a little car sick in passenger seats, but usually not from acceleration.
Not just from a straight line acceleration.
Yeah, it's just the forces are just ridiculous.
Yeah, all-wheel drive and instant torque.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wild.
So, cold gas thrusters. I think this article was saying they're going to be like compressed air, but that raises even more questions. Like, what's the air compressor going to run off of?
And
like, is it going to run off the electric motor? Or
maybe you have to pull up to an air compressor and refill your tank like when you were playing paintball.
Yeah. Yeah, fill it full of CO2.
Yeah.
That's, which would be hilarious.
That would be really, really funny. Knowing Tesla, though, it'll be some proprietary gas blend.
Yeah, probably like nitrogen or something.
Yeah. Well, you have to buy liquid oxygen from us.
But this goes to prove two things. One, electric cars are just going to be faster, period,
yeah,
in every way.
Absolutely.
In like 10 years. And also, they're going to be too fast. Like, we need tiers of driver's licenses for these things at some point.
You know, I've been an advocate for tiered driver's licenses for a long time. And maybe it's just because I kept getting pulled over in cars that I knew could do those speeds safely. And, you know, I had practiced and trained on tracks to do those speeds safely.
Right.
And, you know, it's if you make choices to do things in a safe manner, should you be cited?
Right.
And I think a tiered driver's license program could really help you with that. I imagine if there was a lane where it's like, all right, if you're an S tier driver, just do your thing over here.
Right. Yeah, I thought about that when they put in the toll lanes on E-470 here, or C-470 rather.
Yeah, the express lanes.
Yeah. I'm like, this shouldn't be, oh, I have money so I can drive here, because that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's, I have more money than you, so I don't have to be with the plebs in traffic. What it should be is, I'm a better driver than you. You stay down there in your shitty cars, not knowing how to drive.
Right.
I'm going to be in this lane with people that know how to drive.
Right. You guys, you and your crossovers,
yeah,
can stay in with main traffic, because you can't accelerate anyway.
Somebody was listening to the podcast, I can't remember who it was saying, why do you guys hate crossovers so much?
Because they take so much time and attention away from the cars that we love.
Yeah, I guess that's the main thing. No, I think we were talking about that on Thursday, weren't we?
Yeah. Just because crossovers, they've taken over the whole market.
Yeah.
You know, it's what everybody wants now. And because of that, we get turbocharged Jukes instead of new S chassis.
We're lucky if we get a turbocharged Juke. Most of them are like NA 1.6 liter slow as balls, 0 to 60 time in 12 seconds.
Yeah, like the Rogue Sport.
Yeah.
Or the Subaru Crosstrek.
Yeah.
Which is an amazing seller for Subaru, and I've never met a Crosstrek owner who didn't complain about the power.
Right? Or what's the Nissan Kicks? That's what it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Dear God, that is the most miserable vehicle I think I've ever seen in my life.
And you know, they haven't been out that long, but I've been quoting out a lot of parts for broken Kicks.
Yeah.
For there have been, honestly, it's funny. I get excited when I see a Kicks come through the parts queue.
Yeah.
Because I know it's going to be under warranty because they've only been out a couple years.
Right.
And they break a lot. I had to sell a hub assembly for a brand new car.
Well, I mean, they're made as cheap as they can. I think they're made on the old Versa assembly line, I would guess.
And I was told that they used a lot of Chinese parts to manufacture.
Mm. Yeah.
You know, I'm not 100% on which parts those were.
I think the Kicks was out in China before it was out here in America. I think it was a China only car for like a couple of years.
And then they spec'd one up to US standards.
I think. Because I was reading about the Kicks because I saw one day and I was like, that is the most miserable vehicle I think is on the road. So I need to investigate this more. And it's weird because auto journalists are like, oh, it's okay. And I'm like, no, it's terrible.
It's like you drove a brand new one. Yeah. That was a press car.
But even then, like, I understand journalists have to take into account the market. Like, yeah. You know, I'm not the target buyer for a Kicks.
Right.
But I don't understand who is the target buyer for a Kicks.
People who hate cars.
People who hate cars and don't have a lot of money, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, but also want a new car.
I think the first ad I ever saw for the Kicks, I think, says it all. It shows, a young man walking through a parking garage with, a nice set of headphones. I think they were supposed to be like Beats, but this was a commercial, so they had no branding.
Right.
And it showed him walking up and then his Beats turned into the speaker headrest for the Kicks, and they were basically advertising it as an accessory for your phone.
It's a phone accessory that you can also drive.
Yeah. And you know, for a long time, car companies were having trouble reaching Gen Zers.
Right.
Because a lot of them just didn't want to get their driver's licenses in general. I think we as millennials were some of the last people who, when we turned 16, we wanted our license because for us that meant freedom.
Right.
But, now people basically can sate that biological need for community by being on social media.
Yeah, well, you got social media, you got Zoom now. If you do want to drive somewhere, you just call a car.
Yeah,
and it takes you there.
A 12-year-old can call a Lyft.
Right? Can they?
If they've got their parents' credit card info.
That's very true. That's scary.
Yeah.
But yeah, like there's different ways to get around. Now, I feel in rural areas, like where I grew up, there's still really that need for a car.
Yeah, because you're out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. But, you know, how much of the population lives in city centers at this point? It's a majority, so.
Yeah, even like a metro area.
You know,
like we're technically in Lakewood, but we're in the Denver area.
Yeah, and there's still everything you could ever want around here.
Yeah.
You know, you can still get that transportation. You have light rail stations around here. You have buses if you really want to take a bus.
Yeah.
I don't want to take a bus.
I mean, but you can use your phone to unlock an electric scooter.
Yeah. Like, there's just, so yeah, getting the attention of the younger people was a lot harder because there were just other things out there.
Yeah, and some of the marketing that I see from car companies to try to get to these younger people just, it's ludicrous.
It screams old man.
Yes, old man trying to get the attention of young
people. Yeah.
I saw an ad for, I think it was Mazda, where this young woman grabs a giant red balloon that picks her up and takes her to all these cool places. And then the red balloon turns into a Mazda 3.
I mean, honestly, if you're going to buy a car, a Mazda 3 is a good choice.
Yeah, absolutely.
I like the Mazda 3.
I have nothing against the car. The advertising was just clearly a blatant attempt to pander to people that the advertisers did not understand.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, I feel like, you know, car ads in the past were like, look at this car.
Yes.
The car is dope.
They're selling the car.
Now, they're not. The car is like in the commercial for like a second.
Right. They sell the experiences that the car can get you to now.
Exactly. They try to equate, you know, the experiences you want to have, and they just want to somehow equate that with that car.
Yeah. And, you know, that was actually a big thing with Subaru. When I worked at Subaru, their whole marketing campaign is fixated around You know, we're selling you a lifestyle. We're selling you an experience. The car is the facilitator for this.
Yeah, and a lot of people buy into that too.
They do. I mean, Subaru's honestly doing a great job marketing to their audience.
I mean, they are, but I didn't think about that before. But yeah, Subaru people are kind of like Harley guys.
Yeah.
It's a culture in and of itself.
Right, yeah, especially here in Colorado.
Yeah. But I feel like there's two different Subaru guys here, or Subaru people here in Colorado.
There's the Rex guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's the tuners, the building engines, the racers.
Yeah.
And then there's the 30-year-old couple with a kid that wants to go camping in the mountains wearing their
Patagonia.
Yeah, their Patagonia shit. Like, yeah, there's really two different types of people, but the, you know, Subaru, they're always the racer guys. They'll always be there.
Absolutely. Every brand is going to have their racer guys.
Yeah.
If that car company made a decent sports car in the last 30 years.
Yeah. there will be a fan base for it.
Absolutely. But it's funny because, yeah, it does seem like it's a juxtaposition. There's a certain division between the buyers that they're attracting for one thing versus the other.
Yeah.
Which is why I'm interested to see how Nissan advertises the new Z.
Right.
Because, you know, their lineup right now, they're big on the electric car. They're big on, they're trying to do the experience thing with the Frontiers and the Pathfinders and the Rogues too.
Yeah.
And
if you off-road a Rogue, just don't. You're not going to get far. You're going to break down. Just, that's a bad idea.
That CVT will fail.
Yes. No good transition this time. I only have so many good segues in my head because there's no way I can talk about a Rogue and then talk about legitimate racing. But hey, if you are a fan of legitimate racing, if you are that person who rather build a racing Subaru than a off the shelf lifted Outback that you can take down a dirt road. I got the segue.
There we go.
This weekend, actually, when you're listening to this, these two races would have already happened. So try not to spoil it and go watch the results. F1 at Monaco, probably the most important F1 race every season.
And just, it's probably the most beautiful track in the world.
Oh, it's so good.
I mean, I don't know how much it costs to park your yacht next to that straightaway. But one day I'd love to be on a boat watching that race.
It's probably more money than either of us will make our entire lives.
That's true. We're just going to have to make some rich friends.
Yeah. Or just like show up.
That's true.
Just crash a party.
I'm okay with that.
I'm sure there's so many people on that damn boat, they won't even notice.
If you show up and people like you at the party, you didn't even crash it. You improved it.
True. That's a good point. But, you know, Monaco is... That is F1. When people think F1, they think Monaco.
Absolutely.
You know,
the most iconic race.
It really is. And I say most important in that respect. Really, the most important races are usually towards the end of the season, you know, and points and stuff like that. But
yeah, for the sake of the competition.
Right.
But for the sake of the F1 brand.
Yeah. Like, if they ever lose Monaco, that'll be a... I'm pretty sure the city, like, wants F1 there.
The only thing I could think of happening, and I don't even see this, you know, being too detrimental to F1, is, Monte Carlo or Monaco is in a country that is technically not France.
Yeah.
But it's only got the rights to not be France for as long as a member of that royal family is alive.
Huh.
And there is no current younger heir. So
interesting.
When the current ruler dies, that land reverts back to being France.
That's a weird clause,
right?
That's like, that's some weird old school politics,
right?
Right there.
Yeah, you know that's ancient,
right?
So I'm be interested to see what happens, you know, to the Grand Prix when it's Monaco, France,
right?
You know,
Well, maybe someday we'll find out.
Yeah.
I don't ever think Monaco is going to become a poor city. So that's just where rich people like to hang out.
Rich people love the south of France.
Yes. I mean, I've heard it's gorgeous. I want to go there sometime.
I do too.
Or if you're not into that foo-foo south of France stuff, NASCAR will be at Circuit of the Americas in Texas.
How's that for a transition?
South of France or Texas? But no, I'm actually excited because, you know, NASCAR on a road course and it's been raining in the practice. They say it might rain during the race and they actually have rain tires now. So that could lead to some interesting racing.
That will make for some really interesting racing. And it's still going to be on the car of yesterday chassis.
Yep, because the new chassis, I think, is next year.
Okay, so this could be the your last chance to see some really crazy solid axle spinouts in the rain.
Right? Yeah, I imagine those cars are just a handful around that course.
Oh, yeah, especially in the rain, no matter what tires you have on them.
Right? Yeah. And then next weekend, is Indy 500.
Wow. This is a great time to be a gearhead,
right? That's three really iconic races.
Yeah.
I mean, COTA is new, so I guess I can't call it like iconic, you know, you think of iconic NASCAR races, you think of like the Brickyard and shit like that, but the
Daytona.
Yeah. But you know, Indy 500, F1 at Monaco. And of course, cause I'm a road racer, Circuit of the Americas is better than Circle Track, in my opinion.
Oh, I think so. I think having to turn right and left is a great great way to measure somebody's skill.
Right. But ironically, I like the Indy 500.
But those cars are different. They have downforce.
And they're just faster and crazier.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So yeah,
it is funny. I don't know why I like Indy more than NASCAR. Why I feel like I can forgive an oval track with a kart more than a stock car.
Right? Yeah, I don't.
But it is something inherent. It's real.
But I guess that goes back to why I was excited about the new car from NASCAR.
Yeah.
Oop. All right. I got a little interrupted there by a phone call because I am a terrible podcast host and don't turn off my phone. But
at least it wasn't me this time.
Right? Yeah. No, I was due for one. But Chris brought up a good point. There's also an event this weekend, Formula D event in Orlando.
Which this one's cool because the... the drivers don't have the best prep stages in Formula Drift Orlando. You know, in addition to the humidity of Florida, which is some of the highest humidity in the country, I've spoken to some drifters that were literally prepping their track cars in the grass.
Really?
They had to put down plywood so they could park on top of it and not be completely covered in mud.
Jesus. See, that's some that is some grassroots shit right there. Yeah,
literally. Yeah. And these are $250,000 builds,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, not only do we have F1 and NASCAR, and next week Indy, we got Formula D too. Like, I don't know. If you're into racing, honestly, there's almost too much racing to keep up with all of it.
Yeah, this is a great time to be alive if you're into cars and racing.
And it's kind of weird too, because there was a moment there, like when I was leaving high school, that it kind of seemed like cars were going to die and racing was going to die.
Yeah, I mean, leading up to the 08 and then especially after the 08 crash, which I graduated in 08. So
yeah,
and it's like, hello world.
Yeah, I graduated college in 08.
Wow. So yeah, that's even more intimidating.
Yeah, at least I went out to be a mechanic. My buddy, he got an engineering degree. So he was like, cool, just spent way more money than I ever should on a degree and I can't find a job anywhere.
Nobody's hiring.
Yeah. But yeah, like, you know, that affected racing too.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about this on Thursday. After 2008, there were only four F1 teams.
Right.
And one of them was Red Bull.
Yeah.
Because Red Bull's got its finger in everything badass.
That's just a strange way to word the word that sentence.
Yep. As soon as I said it, I'm like, wow.
You're like, I mean, they probably do. So
they have their fingers in all the badasses.
I would pick the good asses, you know, myself, but that's fine. Yeah, like it just kind of seemed like all the racing, grassroots racing, was drying up because nobody had money to put into the sport.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's why it took me a long time to kind of get into racing, like when I was out of college. Like I wanted to go do racing, but even just autocrossing, I was like, well, I can't. Like, yeah. All my cars were just pieced together out of garbage.
Yeah, it's so expensive.
Right.
I mean, I have only recently been able to successfully put together a drift car that was both able to drive to the track and track.
Yeah.
Without braking.
Right.
And I'm at the ragged edge of that. And I had to have a lot of help from a lot of people to get that done.
Yeah.
And, you know, I always wanted to track my A86, but I just never had the money to get it ready. I am happy I bought that car, though. That car taught me more about driving in such a short amount of time.
Right.
And it's just really cool when you get into a chassis that teaches you like that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to drift the 86 in Assetto Corsa right now because, and I'll talk about this in a second, but the sim rig is actually quote unquote done. But yeah, I'm learning a lot even just doing that, like not even in real life, you know?
Yeah.
And I spent a whole, I think, 2.5 hours in it.
It's a car that it rewards you for doing the correct things,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't punish you too hard for making mistakes.
Right.
It lets you know, but you know, it doesn't kill itself or you.
Right. But that's one thing to kind of go back a little bit with Project Iggy, with that Corolla. That's kind of one thing I wanted to try to show people with this, is that you don't really have to break the bank to make a good car.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it on a budget. If anything, you could do it on a budget now more than you ever could, because the influx of Chinese parts and junkyard parts from other cars.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the whole point of Iggy, is just like, you know, how cheap can you build a car that you can go have fun with? And I need to finish it up, and I need to go into more details with that stuff on the YouTube channel, because, I'll probably make another one in the future. After Iggy, Iggy's kind of an experimental car, and I'm going to keep him around possibly forever. It's just going to be the car that I tinker with and try new stuff on. And I do want to build at some point a budget endurance racing car.
That would be really fun. Something for Lemons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Something that can do Lemons, but can also pass for other ones, like the Lucky Dog Racing or the AER, American Endurance Racing. Something that's Lemons spec, but also can do other endurance racing too.
I would actually love to see a Concours d'Elegance Judge Iggy.
Yeah.
Or really any of our cars.
Right. Yeah. I mean, the Fiesta might pass, although it's in rough shape right now. It needs some stuff.
Yeah, the BRZ needs a paint correction too.
Yeah.
My dog was kind enough to put a nice scratch on my bumper this morning.
Oh.
Yeah.
That sucks.
It's part of being a dog owner.
Yeah. So let's move on real quick here, because we are, of course, as always, running long.
That's why we do what we do.
Right? I mean, if you want a short podcast, there's lots of short podcasts out there.
But it's not this one.
But not this one. I briefly want to talk about SCCA's autocross. I give SCCA a lot of shit a lot of times for their classing. Like the fact that my catless downpipe, I mean my completely factory downpipe on my Fiesta put me in street mod class with a fully prepped EG hatch with a wing and bullshit like that.
Right. If you have coilovers and you show up to SCCA, then you're going to be running with like swapped engines and heavy boost builds.
Yeah. You're running with the big boys.
Yeah. Even if you're running a completely stock motor.
Right. So I've always questioned their rule set, but the rule set is their rule set.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to race, you got to play within the rules. That's part of racing.
Or at least get away with not playing within the rules.
Yeah, you got to know how to cheat. So SCCA also, I think, realized that they're kind of alienating some people with these things.
Yeah.
Because if you go out and you just, I want to come out with my street car, you know, it's a tuned street car, and I want to compete, and then you just get smashed by some expert racer.
Right, an expert racer in a twin turbo LS, fill in the blank.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's just like, well, shit, that wasn't really that fun. You know? As much as I always encourage people to come out to Track Attack to, like, if you're new, don't focus on times.
Right.
Don't try to compete. You're out here to learn.
Right. But you wanna be within, you know, so many seconds of the leader.
Right. Well, if you just get, it's like if you were to show up and try to play basketball and there's a bunch of NBA players, you're not going to go back out there with them. You're going to be like, that was terrible. I had a terrible time.
Right. Even if you had a great day, it's like, well, I have no future in this.
Right.
Is how it looks.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always accessible. There's always something you can do to improve your time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it takes a long time to build cars, especially on a budget.
Right.
You know, you have to plan out and budget for the parts. You have to plan out and time or money to get them installed. You know, it takes some time.
Yeah.
And it's okay if your car isn't finished.
Yeah.
Because truth be told, it's never going to be finished. There's always going to be something else you want to do.
Right. And it's also okay if you're not the best driver in the world.
Like, yeah.
Trust me, if you've only done street, like, I don't want to say street racing, street driving.
Yeah.
Or street racing for that matter.
Yeah.
If that's all you've ever done, or, you know, hit the canyons, and you come out to a legitimate racetrack or even autocross with people that have been doing it for a long time, you're going to learn that, like, those skills don't transfer like you think they do.
Yeah. You're not at the level you think you are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. Even I mean, even go to like your local indoor karting track, go-kart track, because there's people there that know how to kart, and they're going to be 3-4 seconds faster than you on like a 40-second lap, and you're like, how?
Right, because you're used to all the things that come into the mind of the street racer, the street driver.
Right.
You know, there are certain things that just don't apply as much, like accounting for certain potholes.
Right. Or just like how you apply the brakes.
Yeah.
Braking when you're racing is considerably different.
Yes.
You know, you can get away with like being harsh on your inputs, I feel like, you know, street driving, and the car will be fine because you're not pushing it to the limits.
Right. But you've always got that margin for error.
Right. But then when you come out and you're pushing it to the absolute limit.
Yes.
Like you don't have that room for error. You have to be smooth with your inputs.
Yeah.
And that's why I really do think autocross is a great introduction instead of doing track driving. A lot of people criticize autocross for like it being slow and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You know, that was never my criticism with autocross. I legitimately think it's racing. I just had problems with SCCA's rule set. But luckily, this new rule set from SCCA, the extreme street category, which I think has actually been around for a little while, but I only heard about it recently, is kind of like the track attack that I do down at Pikes Peak International Raceway.
Yeah, the way these classes work, it looks like it's a lot more accessible. You can show up with a lightly modified vehicle and run against other lightly modified vehicles.
Or you can just kind of show up with whatever you got is the thing I got out of it. Like, if you want to build a really cool street car with coilovers and a turbo kit and all that stuff, you can show up and race in this class.
It's
kind of open. But it classes itself. So there's basically kind of like track attack. You got you're divided into three groups, your all wheel drive, your rear wheel drive, your front wheel drive.
Right.
And then you have minimum weights that you need to meet to be in either the A or the B. Although it looks like B is the fast one here.
Which gets a little confusing.
A is the slow one, even though in the track attack that I do, A is the fast one, B is the slow one. But, other than that, like, you know, What wheels do you want to run? Cool, run them. We don't care about the size or the width. It has to be 200 tread wear tires, so that's about the same as everything.
Yeah.
Suspension and brakes, just like, do your thing. Just the body has to be stock. You know, you can't modify strut towers or pickup points or stuff like that.
Which is cool. This is a lot like grassroots drifting.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can modify your suspension and your brakes. You just can't, you can't modify the body.
Right.
Yeah, you have to keep it within the bounds of the body.
And like engine cylinder block or rotor housing, I like how they put that in there, must be from a production automobile or a copy. Like, what engine do you want in your car? Cool, put it in. We don't care.
Right, and it just has to have been a production engine in something.
Yeah, in something. But yeah, and you know, this is not going to be the most competitive class because the rules are so open that you might be able to like show up with like an open wheel car and like somehow like, well, I guess it has to be an automobile or truck manufactured for road use.
You could show up with an Ariel Atom.
Yeah, technically you could. It's been manufactured for road use.
Yeah.
You know, but so it's a very open class, but it gives people a place to try to compete with their friends. You know, like if a group of Subaru guys show up that are normally just on the street, they have a place they can compete with among themselves or, you know, and not be put in weird classes that are just going to be, they're going to be smoked by other people or just feel like they're wrongly classed, you know. And the other thing about classing is, like, you've probably noticed this when you go to track attack, you kind of get to know the people in your class.
Yeah, because you spend a lot of time with the people who are parked near you.
Right.
You know, I always end up meeting a cool Miata owner because there's always one parked near me.
Yeah. So it's like, let's say, like for me, when I showed up to that SCCA event and I was in street mod, I didn't really have a ton to talk about with that guy, like about setup of the car or what he's doing, you know, because he was driving, his car was completely different than mine. I'm not going to learn anything from his car, honestly.
Yeah.
You know, but if I was in the right class with all the other Fiestas, we could talk about, hey, what tire pressures are you running? You know, how are you taking this corner?
Yeah.
So that's another thing I didn't think about until just now about the extreme street. You know, this allows people that just like to modify cars in general to get together and be like, oh yeah, well, what'd you do this? Well, I did these coilovers and, you know, I set them up to the little stiffer in the rear.
Yeah.
You know, and it gives that camaraderie that you wouldn't have if you showed up with your modified Subaru, it had to go against a twin turbo LS, you know, Corvette.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
There's no crosstalk there.
Yeah, there's no meshing there.
Yeah.
You know, the tires are different. The suspension's completely different.
Right.
And how you take the corner in an STI versus a Corvette's completely different.
Right. So, I don't know. I'm just excited to see SCCA trying to appeal to a bigger crowd. You know, that's what Religion Speed's all about. Get more people into racing.
Yeah, and I'm glad they're making it more accessible because, you know, it's hard to just show up to an SCCA event and drive like we do at Track Attack.
Yeah, like Track Attack, you can literally just show up same day, give them money, and you're in.
Yeah, you don't even have to register online.
No.
It just makes it easier.
Right. But yeah, SCCA, I've done that before. Like, oh shit, there's an event like tomorrow. And I'm like, oh, I was supposed to buy a driver's thing 2 days ago and the ticket 2 days ago or else I'm not in. It's like, yeah. Oh shit, I guess I can't go.
Last time we went to Track Attack, I literally woke up at 8 a.m. and bought my ticket online and then got in the car and we drove to the track.
Right. I mean, that's why I love them there because they're so chill.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only thing more chill than that's IMI.
Yeah. Which is maybe too chill.
Yeah, it's like, show up, oh, you want to run? You know where to go? Too bad, ask somebody.
Yeah, we can't be bothered. No, yeah. I mean, the staff there, of course, actually really fun.
They are great. It's just very loosely regulated.
Yeah.
Which, you know, for certain things is better.
Yeah. It like I said, it reminds me of the vibe from like a Japanese track.
Yeah, you know? Show up and run.
Yeah. So, yeah, if you do want to do SCCA Autocross, or you've heard me talking about Track Attack and thought that was a cool idea, SCCA has you covered now, no matter where you are in the country.
Yeah. So, and there's a mall parking lot or community college near you where they're setting up these courses.
Yep. I mean, that's why I like Track Attack better than Autocross, because it is on a legit track. And you just kind of feel, even though it's basically an Autocross.
Yeah. Even though it's coned off.
Yeah.
We get to go up onto the oval sometimes.
Yeah. It feels like a real racetrack.
Yeah.
But hey, I've raced in plenty of parking lots too. And there's always shit to learn, you know, and that's the thing. If you're starting out, or heck, if you're a seasoned vet, there's always things to learn.
When you stop learning, you die.
That's very true. That's a quote from something, isn't it?
Yep. I can't remember who.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember that quote though, but you know, that's been one of my life mottos. And that's one thing I like about this podcast too, is always researching, always learning.
Yeah.
Always new experiences.
Yeah. There's a whole world out there of racing and cars and new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
And
the people you meet from this stuff.
I mean, you meet some really cool people and they're all drawn to the car world from just different aspects of life.
Yeah. That's what always amazed me, is people can come from just vastly different backgrounds.
But we're all united by our love of the track.
Right. Yeah, and once you start racing, I don't care if it's just autocross or if it's, you know, wheel-to-wheel racing at a quote-unquote legitimate racetrack, it's a bug and it bites you.
It does. It really does. I wish I could afford to blow a set of tires every week at IMI.
Right? That'd be the dream. Come on, tire companies, sponsor us.
Please sponsor us.
Speaking of your 240 and stuff, have you done anything to any of your cars recently?
I haven't done anything. I did get some parts in. I'm looking forward to installing. I got a GK Tech short shifter and a polyurethane transmission mount.
Okay.
So those will go on once we put on the new clutch.
That'll probably firm up the shifting, or solidify the shifting, I should say, a little more.
Yeah, I'm excited about it because, you know, the shifter throw is a little long on any factory 90s car like that. GK Tech makes a solid aluminum transmission mount, but I wanted to retain some drivability.
It's a little much. Yeah.
I didn't want all that vibration coming straight into the body.
Yeah.
So I went with the polyurethane one, and hopefully the next time we record, I'll have gotten at least that short throw installed, and I'll be able to give you a review on it. Because I was shopping between the GK Tech, the B&M and the ISR short throw shifters.
Yeah, didn't you say that B&M was like crazy expensive?
Yeah, the B&M's like $300.
Yeah.
Which I have had the fortunate opportunity to try out a B&M shifter, and they are fantastic. They feel like an OE shifter, which for a short throw is
surprising
praise.
Yeah.
And I have some ISR parts on the car, but I wanted to go with something that had a nice fit and finish since I'd be using it so often.
Yeah. I mean, that's a pretty important part. You want to make sure it's of decent quality.
Yeah, because you want to feel like, you want to feel confidence when you're shifting.
Right.
And so far, everything I've gotten from GK Tech, I tried some of their hub-centric rings. They've worked out great. I use their upgraded fan. It moves a ton of air. so far, everything I've gotten from them has been really good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited to get this stuff put in.
Yeah, no, that'll be exciting. Like I said, they should make the shifting feel a lot better, and then we'll get the clutch in it, which of course will make the shifting a hell of a lot better.
Yeah,
it definitely needs that.
But be able to kick the clutch and it actually lock up. I'll right. probably spin it all the way around a couple of times.
Yeah, before you get used to it. Yeah, I can see that. I don't think I have any updates on any of my cars. I'm currently trying to find a home for Iggy because I switched jobs, and it was sitting at the shop where I worked, and the new shop really doesn't have any storage area. So if you're in the Denver area and you have garage space I can rent from you, I would love to hear from you because, yeah, need more room, running out of room for things.
We always need more garage space.
Oh, it's ridiculous. I need that pole barn.
Yep.
Next weekend, I'm going to be out at the Slush Motorsports Festival. Are you going to be going down to that, Chris?
Yeah, I'd love to head down. Is it Saturday and Sunday?
You know, I should probably know that. It's on my calendar.
It's Memorial Day weekend. I might run into Monday.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. It's Memorial Day weekend, so it's actually a three-day weekend. It is May 29th, which is a...
Saturday.
Saturday. So it's on Saturday. So I think they're going to be partying into the night, so that's probably a good idea anyways to have it on a Saturday.
Yeah.
Yeah, although, like you said, Memorial Day, so whatever. Yeah, we would have that day off anyways.
We got the extra weekend.
Right? So that'd be cool because we can go do car stuff and still have a regular weekend too.
Yeah, I like that because that's the big thing is, you know, when you have to go back to work on Monday and you spend all weekend autocrossing, it gets a bit exhausting.
Yeah, you're like, I need a break.
Yeah.
But yeah, so me and Chris will be at Slush Motorsports Festival. So come find us. Just look for the guys with long, crazy, curly hair.
Yeah, that's us.
Yeah.
that should be our new slogan.
I need to get us some Religion of Speed t-shirts.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, I wonder if I can get some made before next weekend. So that way people can identify us better.
Yeah, that would be cool. And our logo looks great.
Yeah, I love the logo. You know, my girlfriend Kayla designed the praying hands. And then Hamza kind of cleaned up the outer details, did the font and stuff like that, and it was just perfect combination. So yeah, if you want to see us, we'll be out there next weekend, and like I said, if you have a home for Iggy, let me know. And if you do have that home, you can let me know by sending an email to contact@religionofspeed.com. No new viewer mail this week. I was communicating back and forth with Nate, the guy who wrote in last time bunch, but we were just bullshitting on Instagram.
What do you think of our response?
We didn't really talk about that. We got to talk about other shit. You know how it goes.
Yep. I know exactly how it goes.
We're like, hey, let's talk about this. And then an hour later, I don't know, what were we talking about again? I forgot.
It's a good thing we're not politicians. We'd go to a peace summit and spend the whole time talking about beer.
You know, that might do better though.
That's true.
We might actually make some peace at a peace summit.
That's true. All we have to do is make small talk about other things.
Right? Exactly.
Let's go to Gaza.
Let's not. All right, guys. I want to thank you all for listening as always. I know we are growing slowly, and I appreciate everybody listening. If you can for us, spread the word of the podcast. This is going to be episode 20. So we're getting up there. And I really want to start pushing, growing the show from here on out. I feel like we've got our system down. And I wanted to wait until we kind of had the show down a little bit. And now, if you can, if you know somebody out there who likes cars, who likes to listen to a couple idiots try to make jokes and banter and stuff like that, share the show, please. You know, that's what helps us grow. And that's what's going to help us get more either advertising money or Patreon in the future, like I was saying, so we can do bigger and better things and just be more entertaining and goofy for you guys. Give you a little something to look forward to, hopefully every week.
Absolutely. And we can bump this up to once a week, maybe.
Yeah, I would love to.
Yeah.
Know? But it's gotta make sense, time wise and money wise. So
absolutely.
But that doesn't disregard anybody that's listening right now. Of course, we always appreciate you. So as always, thank you. And that's going to do it for us.
All right. You guys have a great one.
That's not how we end this, man.
You're right.
Yeah, no, we got to thank the band Wheels.
We got to thank the band Wheels
for our use of our theme song.
Colors.
Colors.
Yep.
And you can find them at...
at Bandcamp. Wheels the band at bandcamp.com.
You got it.
All right.
Damn. That's pretty good. All right, guys, that is going to do it for us then. And until next time, peace out.
I tried out another outro that didn't work.